The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The election was probably lost 3 years ago when the White House was saying inflation was transitory, when everyone knew it wasn't, and they were saying there wasn't a border crisis when there was.
When you juxtapose Vice President Harris and Beyonce against Donald Trump at either McDonald's or wearing an orange vest in a garbage truck, that was the difference in the election. It had everything to do with the economy, but it also had to do with who is speaking directly to the voters.
But I am struck, I think, by the discouragement that you see among Democrats and those who opposed Donald Trump. Now, the contrast with 2016 is so striking. Then we had all these protests going on and declarations of defiance and the Women's March. And now you find, I think, people who did not vote for Donald Trump for president. It's not clear to me what their reaction is. I think you see a kind of retreat from the public debate, at least for a while. This does seem like a sort of dispirited moment, I think, for those who did not support him.
We would do an interview, and to Stephanie's point, the questions were small and processy and about, like,
dumb.
They were not informing a voter who was trying to listen to learn more.
You know, we had this podcast yesterday on Pod Save America where, all of the campaign staffers decided to call up and go to Pod Save America. It was disappointing at best, hearing their lack of self-awareness, their lack of self-reflection.
And I know this is an uncertain time. I'm clear-eyed about that. I know you're clear-eyed about it. And it feels heavy. And I just have to remind you, don't you ever let anybody take your power from you. You have the same power that you did before November 5th. And you have the same purpose that you did. And you have the same ability to engage and inspire. So don't ever let anybody or any circumstance take your power from you.
Not the greatest look for Kamala coming back from vacation after being beaten badly on November 5th, how her advisors said, hey, let's do a video and offer no self-reflection, no self-awareness, nothing. In fact, I'll show it to you later. She was bragging at one point about how much money they spent to lose. It was record-setting. It really is unbelievable. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the day before Thanksgiving. Welcome to the show, and hopefully you'll have a restful and enjoyable Thanksgiving weekend. You can get to the live video stream of this show at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. So, surprisingly, there's quite a lot to get to on today's show. I woke up this morning thinking there may not be too many stories that grab our interest as the news cycle slows way down for the American holiday. But there is a lot to try to get through. I have a feeling I won't get to as many of those clips on physical health now that we've got all of these new appointments, the HHS, and then the yesterday NIH, President Trump. I won't try to say his name now. It's in an article later. But he was a vaccine skeptic during the COVID hysteria. So it's interesting to just look at some of the appointments that Donald Trump has made with respect to your health. And this coming from someone, Donald Trump, I mean, who's not exactly a picture of health himself. But he attributes his energy, his longevity to the genes, I guess. Now, you compare it with some of the people that are actively attacking him and have been for years. We've had some discussions here internally about how that Trump derangement syndrome prematurely ages you. you see some it's probably not across the board, but I submit to you that it's not good for your health to hate someone. This is Benny Johnson put this out. Now, again, the picture of her on the left, this is when she's running for office. She only was in the race for what, 3-4 months? They probably airbrushed the photo on the left. But then you compare it with the video that she put out yesterday, although that's not the most flattering freeze frame. So let's be fair. But I believe, this is just my opinion, I believe that hating Trump, that getting Trump, ages you prematurely. So there you go. You heard it here first on the Trumpet Daily. Listen to Jesse Waters. He's commenting on this kind of weird video the Kamala people put out yesterday, and saying that, you know, what you don't see is, well, one of the commentators even brought that out in the cold open. There's no self-reflection. There's no, hey, we got a lot of things wrong. We really got whooped on November 5th, and here's why we think it happened. This is number 11.
You notice what we're not hearing about? What got Kamala into this mess? It's how Joe Biden governed the country. His policies killed us. Maybe we shouldn't have printed a gazillion dollars and spent it on electric cars and windmills so people couldn't afford bacon. Maybe we shouldn't have invited the third world in and handed them hotel rooms and debit cards. If Biden had stayed in, he was doomed. Kamala was doomed. She had no message, no vision, and all her team did was lie. Trump was an unstoppable force destined to retake the White House. He had a record and a story to tell. Two brushes with death and looked great in the Mickey D's apron. If Trump lost, he was going to prison. He put his life on the line to win. Democrats put your life on the line to win.
That's Jesse from last night. The Democrats playing the blame game. Whose fault is it? How did they lose in such spectacular fashion? Who's to blame? Well, the dust has settled now, and you've got some coming forward pointing out just how disastrous this campaign was, Kamala's, I mean, from start to finish. Trump, as Jesse noted, had everything on the line. He loses, he's off to prison, but he wins. He wins all the swing states. They gain Republican votes in every single state except for Washington, I think it was. Gains right across the board. Too big to rig. This is Mark Halperin commenting on just how disastrous Kamala's campaign was from the beginning. Clip 5.
Joe Biden should never have run. He really shouldn't have run in 2020. But he certainly shouldn't have run for re-election. And she shouldn't have run. When Joe Biden called her and said, I'm not going to run, maybe. She should have said, you know what, I'm not going to run either. Because I can evaluate my capacity to beat Donald Trump in 100 days, and I'm not the right person. I've known her a long time. She's not good at making difficult choices under pressure. That is the job description of president and presidential candidate. And she should have said, this is going to require a lot of very difficult decisions about how to talk about the Biden-Harris record. The biggest vulnerability Joe Biden had, besides his loss of acuity and his age, was our failed record. Anyone else isn't going to have to defend the Biden-Harris record.
He's right. She had to come out and defend their record. And she kept flip-flopping on how she went about doing that. She'd say one thing one day and then kind of change it around the next day. She has trouble making difficult decisions under pressure. I mean, that's brutal. And this is just a commentator who, I don't believe he's some big-time conservative. She was bad. I mean, this goes back to Obama. There was a time when Obama, remember, and I know I've covered that this week, but there was a time when Obama could do no wrong. But he really backed her to be the VP 4 years ago, even though she was just as unpopular then as she is now. And he got behind her presidency or her run for president. this past summer, although it took him a few days. So again, there's a few things we don't know about what happened behind closed doors. But still, you can see why Obama's quiet as a mouse. You can see why he's been silenced. This was a disaster, and everyone now sees it. Listen to David Plouffe. He was the senior advisor to Kamala and her campaign. Clip 10.
When we got in, and my recollection is some of that snapped back, but, you know, we were behind. I mean, I think it surprised people because there was these public polls that came out in late September, early October, showing us with leads that we never saw. It wasn't a race that moved a lot. And so I think when you think about our own internal analytics, you know, if you have Wisconsin at 47-47 or Pennsylvania 48-47 Trump, let's say, which I think is where we had it at the end, you know, you've got to have undecided break your way more than your opponents, and you've got to get a little benefit from turnout, which we weren't able to do.
That's David Plouffe saying that we were behind from the beginning. We never would have known that. It, just by listening to the regime media. And by the way, when they talk about Kamala's campaign lying about the economy and the border and so on, you have to add the regime media to the mix as well. Because they promoted those lies. Inflation, it's just transitory. It's going to be gone in a snap of a finger. They lied to you. They lied for years. They covered up for Joe Biden. They covered up the fact that he was in sharp mental decline. And then they finally had to come forward and tell the truth. On June 27th. June 27th. And then she's selected, or Joe Biden, finally he's pressured out. Week and a half or so after the assassination attempt on Trump's life. And I mean, when she came forward, she was, I mean, the vibes, right? The energy, the joy, all of that. We were told after the Democrat convention that there hadn't been a phenomenon like this since Barack Obama in 2008, since the Dear Leader. Listen to Kamala from this video that was just roundly mocked on social media yesterday. Listen to what she said about her campaign, clip 2.
And you gave all that you could to support our campaign. Because of your efforts, get this, we raised an historic $1.4 billion, almost $1.5 billion from grassroots supporters alone. The most in presidential campaign history.
The most in presidential campaign history. This is a point of emphasis for her. She's bragging about it. We had $1.4 billion. And we lost every swing state. She forgot to add that. Yet we were behind from the beginning. We never made up ground. David Plouffe admitted that. This is from the New York Times. She burned through $1.5 billion in 15 weeks. It makes me think of that section in the Wonderful World Tomorrow book by Herbert Armstrong, where he talks about how the government of God in the world tomorrow, God's kingdom, when it's set up and established, there's not going to be any more political campaigns, you know, running these ads nonstop, millions and millions of dollars. How do you burn through $1.5 billion in just 15 weeks? It says, despite her significant financial advantage, Harris became the first Democratic presidential candidate to lose the national popular vote in 2 decades. Ceding every battleground state to Mr. Trump. Her cash-rich campaign spared no expense as it hunted for voters, paying for an avalanche of advertising, social media influences, a for-hire door-knocking operation, thousands of staff, pricey rallies, a splashy Oprah town hall, celebrity concerts, and even drone shows. It says it was a spree that averaged roughly $100 million per week. She tried to buy her way to the presidency. And as I say, she failed miserably. One particular Harris payment has drawn attention, or one that has drawn attention in the aftermath of the election. The $1 million paid to Oprah Winfrey's production firm. And Oprah, she's since responded saying, well, you know, we had to set up a studio. I'm not in this business anymore. And so the actual cost was $2.5 million. And Oprah's like, I didn't take a personal fee. I mean, my staff has to be paid. So come on. We charged her $2.5 million. Where's all the pro bono offers from these celebrities that said we were about to be taken over by Adolf Hitler? You think they'd be lining up to offer their services freely. But they didn't. Beyonce didn't. She got paid. She didn't even come and sing. I mean, this is hilarious. She didn't even sing a song. I forget how much she got paid, but they got paid. They all got paid. This was a massive slush fund. How do you justify paying Al Sharpton $500,000 before you sit down with him to give him an interview, or for him to give you an interview with these softball questions that he would have thrown anyway, even if he was paid zero? Because that's just who he is. He hates Trump. He works for MSNBC. You can't imagine an easier interview than with Al Sharpton. But she got that and gave him $500,000. Can you believe this? Like I said the other day, I mean, what if Trump Jr. or what if Laura Trump or what any of the Trumps, what if they were giving off $500,000 here, $500,000 there? You would not hear the end of it. I mean, thankfully, we're getting a few of the details, even from the New York Times after the fact. A massive slush fund. That's what it amounts to. Everybody got paid. And she lost. And it was an embarrassing loss. You know, the step back viewpoint here is that God intervened. God would not let them win this time around. He had prophesied. Jeroboam's coming back. That's why we were saying it from day one after they stole the election. Think about all the things that God allowed in 2020. And of course, that's exposed so much of this corruption and lawlessness. And then think about all the things that he prevented this time around. Donald Trump, more popular than ever, as I'll get to in just a second. And they nearly assassinated him twice. He shows up at McDonald's in Pennsylvania. The regime media is there waiting for him to trip up and stumble. Surely this is going to be a disastrous PR move. Instead, it's another iconic photo that you can add to the refrigerator. Oh, yes. How, with maybe a third of the amount of money that Kamala had, how did he do it? Well, I think as Jesse noted there, he talked about policies. And as it turns out, that's something that Americans, a lot of Americans, seemed pretty interested in. The policies, the border, the inflation, the crime. You know, Steve Bannon earlier today made, I think, a really profound point talking about some of the reports yesterday on MSNBC, on CNN, how that they're actually talking about, you know, immigration. They're talking about, you know, imports and exports from Canada, from Mexico. This is how much we get in terms of, you know, fresh vegetables. They're giving percent, and their take is not right. It's still skewed. It's still off the wall in some respects. You know, that it's because we're going to send immigrants home. There's not going to be any immigrants to pick the vegetables, or it's going to just drive inflation further. That's their take. But Bannon's point was that they're actually talking about policies. Okay, so Trump says, I'm going to slap a 25% tariff on Mexico and Canada. It's actually getting the talking heads to talk about tariffs, to talk about imports, to talk about jobs, to talk about inflation. And even if their take is wrong, at least they're talking about it. Like I covered earlier this week, I mean, in some cases, you're actually getting some honest reporting. Isn't that a breath of fresh air? We're 2 seconds removed from Trump as Hitler. These people are, I mean, they are capable of pivoting on a dime, particularly when their jobs are on the line. Their jobs. Their million-dollar jobs. Rachel Maddow takes a $5 million pay cut, bringing her take-home pay down to $25 million instead of $30. No wonder these people are in a bubble, an echo chamber. They never get out and see what every other American sees on a daily basis. It was, in every respect, by every metric, a disastrous campaign. $1.5 billion. And in the end, we find out that Kamala's more unpopular than even Hillary Clinton. I mean, then that's saying something. Her campaign, I mean, you get into the the campaign finance violations. Like I said yesterday, I mean, you put Dinesh D'Souza in charge of her campaign, he'd probably be in prison right now. This is from the Washington Free Beacon. Kamala Harris's campaign gave $500,000 to Al Sharpton's nonprofit weeks before glowing interview with anti-Semitic MSNBC host. And then MSNBC says they didn't know about it. And Sharpton, for his part, he doesn't say anything about it when he's interviewing her. Just so that you viewers know, in the interest of full disclosure, I did pocket a cool half million from the Harris campaign before we agreed to this interview. How do these people get away with this? They're all crooks. They're all lining their pockets. Sharpton did not disclose payments from the Harris campaign during either segment with the candidate. National Action Network did not respond to requests for comment. MSNBC also did not respond. They've just gone quiet. They're silent. They've been silenced. Harris's donations to NAN and similar groups were part of a $1 billion spending spree that has sparked heartache and soul searching within the Democratic Party. The campaign, which ended $20 million in debt. That's how much of a disaster these people, think of them running a country. Forget about a campaign. They have $1.5 billion and they end up $20 million in debt. Now, it's important to understand that mindset, that mentality, that's what's running the Pentagon. That's why they can't pass their audits. That's what's running every government agency. No wonder you've got people actually getting behind a new department that wants to make government more efficient and more cost-effective. Cheaper, smaller. The New York Post this morning. Al Sharpton's acceptance of Kamala Harris's campaign's $500,000 donation is a bridge too far for some MSNBC colleagues. I guess there's some colleagues there at MSNBC that don't like this. they don't appreciate this. You know, why are you getting $500,000 for your little softball interview? I guess everybody wants a piece of the pie. And then you add to this, I mean, it was in the cold open, the woman there that said, you know, we're demoralized. And I've commented over the last couple of weeks about just how relatively calm and peaceful it is after what could have been the most contentious and even violent election and post-election period that we've ever seen. Instead, it was nothing like that. This Axios article, I think this is the one that Breitbart referred to, the one I read from yesterday, it says, while President-elect Trump's 2016 win sparked shock, outrage, and massive protests, the response to his 2024 victory has been more muted. 8 years ago, they were outraged. They took to the streets. Madonna fantasized about burning down the White House. Johnny Depp, although I think he apologized later, he fantasized about assassinating a president. It says here, the big picture, 2016 birthed the resistance, a political movement to protest Trumpism online and in the streets. There's still plenty of resistance to Trump across the country, but little mass mobilization. The troops, the stormtroopers, they're not taking to the streets this time around. And this time around, the Trump supporters are coming out into the open, into the clear of day, expressing their support for Donald Trump publicly. This is from The Nation. Left wing, through and through. Somehow Americans are liking Trump better every day. And The Nation just can't understand it. It's just funny. Americans beholding the squalid. Listen to this. I mean, this, somebody was locked in their office for hours coming up with this opening line. Americans beholding the squalid, bottom-feeding composition of the Trump cabinet in waiting, a grim panoply of grifters, self-dealing hacks, and sexual assaulters, report that they like what they see. What is wrong with Americans? I mean, he's appointing all these sexual assaulters. They just can't figure it out. How could he be increasing his popularity rating? Well, as I've noted this week, he's got the king-like powers. He's got the king-like prestige. He's coming in the spirit of Jeroboam, the ancient Israelite king. And he's more popular than ever. More popular. And then the liberals, the Democrats, the communists, they're more depressed than ever. Because everything they threw at him, it just didn't stick. They tried to destroy him with the impeachment. They tried to destroy him with spying and investigating him. They tried to destroy him with lawfare, the indictments, the convictions. And then they tried to assassinate him. Ruth, Crooks, and now you don't even hear about the would-be assassins. What do we know about Crooks that we didn't know in July 14th? What more have we learned about Crooks since July 13th? Nothing. They just brush it aside. It says here the net approval rating for the Trump transition is 18%, according to a CNN poll, compared to just 1% during the transition into the first Trump White House. Last time, 8 years ago, 1% gain. This time, 18% approval, that is. It says here, 53% of respondents say they're optimistic or excited about the prospects for a second term, a photographic negative of the initial dawn of the Trump era, where the same majority said that it scared or concerned them. People were scared or concerned about a new Trump in 2016, a new president in Trump. Well, because we were told, listen, he's a fascist. Look at his tweets. I mean, look at how mean his tweets are. These findings come in the wake of a series of objectively awful cabinet appointments and botched and corrupt follow-throughs, from the transparently doomed nomination of Matt Gaetz as Attorney General to the sexual assault charges against defense. Now you see they're really concerned about moral uprightness, these people. play the Catherine Herridge admission yesterday. She's talking about the Hunter Biden laptop, and when she was working at CBS at the time, and when they had the story, it was ready to go. And listen to what she says in this revelation.
We eventually broadcast a story about the Hunter Biden laptop after the midterm elections in 2022. When we did the story, we did it after the midterms. I argued against that because it was ready before the midterms. And my training is that you should always do the story when it's ready to go. You should not be dictated by the political cycle. Once we got the laptop story on the morning news, I felt that there was so much there that we could still do. For example, in the text messages, there's unfortunately the use of the N-word, the liberal use of the N-word. And I thought this was worthy of a story, but I was told that it was not something that interested CBS News. Then I asked for a forensic review of the laptop, and we found that there were more than half a dozen emails that were likely used by Joe Biden. I thought that was a story. But the answer that came back was, well, we need to know what the content is of the emails. But that was going to be a years-long process. So there was no way. So there were a lot of reasons I was told not to do it, not to pursue it.
It implicates the sitting president, albeit fake, of the United States, this laptop. And he's got all these text messages where he just liberally uses the word, the N-word. And CBS execs, I guess, thought, well, that's not really that big of a story. Can you imagine their heads exploding again if all of this applied to the Trump family? I mean, just think about the coverage would be wall to wall and never ending. She, as it is, CBS just sat on it. Nothing to see here. You know, Hunter Biden, he's not a terrible person, not at all. And then finally it's exposed, what, years and years and years later? Look at how much they persecuted Rudy Giuliani for exposing this back in 2020. They're still persecuting him in court and so on. He's out of money. You feel sorry. They ruin lives and think nothing of it. Hunter, meanwhile, he continues on with his addictions. No problem. This article about all the disastrous picks that Trump has made, the nation, they can't understand why Trump would still be popular. It says newly surfaced allegations that longtime Trump legal fixer Boris Epstein has been selling access to the president-elect to aspiring cabinet nominees for $100,000 a pop. This is outrageous. Now, if Kamala wants to pay Al Sharpton $500,000, that's perfectly normal, I guess. This is all to say nothing, of course, of the woeful unpreparedness of cabinet nominees for the consequential posts they're assuming. How the underlying message throughout this piece at The Nation, how is Donald Trump popular when he's surrounded by idiots, when he's surrounded by crooks, when he's surrounded by rapists? That's what they're saying. They don't get it. They don't get it. A lot of people, though, across America do. They do get it. Listen to Ned Ryan last night on Laura Ingraham, clip 6.
But I'm grateful for Donald Trump's political courage. Think about these last 3 years. A normal human being would have collapsed under the lawfare, under the multiple assassination attempts, under the constant hoaxes and collusions, nonstop attacks from the corporate propagandists. This man, the courage that he has shown, has given us a singular moment in American history to turn this ship around. You can see that optimism in the polls that you were talking about earlier, where 60% approve of his transition, because they realize that they now have a president-elect who actually wants to prioritize the American people in all things. No more bad trade deals. No more selling us out on immigration and destroying our country through systematic illegal immigration. Not foisting on us bad economic policies that have been crushing most of the average Americans.
The Financial Times has a piece saying that the vibe shift was there for all to see. I mean, and David Plouffe said the same thing on the other side. We knew from internal polling we were running from behind from the beginning, and we never did catch him. Which tells us what? That we were lied to. That there was plenty of propaganda when it was announced through the Democrat convention, all through the assassination attempts, two of them, covering those up while really putting Kamala out there like she was the new wave. It was sweeping across the country. No, the Times has it right. The vibe shift was actually in the favor of Trump, and it was there for everyone to see. It goes through, again, more polling, the levels of enthusiasm, and so on. And then further on, it says here the 2016 and 2020 elections were won because voters were motivated to keep out first Clinton and then Trump. They get it wrong on the 2020, of course. Voters didn't enter. Well, and it goes on and says that the strategy this time around was get Trump. So in other words, you Democrats need to vote so that we keep Trump out of the Oval Office. He cannot return to the Oval Office, said Nancy Pelosi. He must be eliminated, said that congressman from New York. Forget his name. But it says here, voters didn't enter the polling booths holding their noses. They went in with their eyes wide open. This was a positive endorsement of Trump, not a vote for the least bad option. It says, as a distressed Democrat said to me last week, the last time he won, nobody knew what we'd be getting. This time, it's like, wow, okay, you people actually want this. People actually want Trump. This is why the nation is scratching its head. How does this happen? How could you possibly love him after all that we've told you? You're supposed to hate him. People aren't cooperating. There's an article I mentioned, Bannon's point from this morning, that, you know, even if the analysis is wrong, they're actually talking about imports and trade imbalances and immigrants and the jobs and the jobs they provide, the jobs they take away. Issues. Reuters has a piece, a detailed coverage of the fentanyl crisis in America. Again, this is from Reuters. No fan of Trump, for sure, says Donald Trump's return to power portends a shakeup in the U.S. approach to addressing America's fentanyl crisis, and what counter-narcotics officials say is the biggest obstacle to solving it. That would be China. Advisors to Republican president-elect's transition team are advocating a much more aggressive posture towards Beijing over fentanyl than the one adopted by Democratic incumbent Joe Biden. Says here, already Trump is signaling that to stem the flow of narcotics, he will resort to his weapon of choice, tariffs. He's going to stop it. I mean, you can see where this is leading to a trade war and the Mart of Nations prophecy in the Psalms. And we'll spend more time on that as we progress through the Trump administration. But, you know, on the positive side here, he's showing some strength, some leadership. He's putting his foot down. The illegal immigrant traffic, it's going to stop. The sex trafficking, the drug trafficking. We're not only going to seal the border and send immigrants back, we're going to go after the cartels. And we're going to go after the government in Mexico and Canada if you don't help, if you don't support us. And what happens? He gets a phone call from Justin Trudeau within hours. Mexico announces that it's going to break up the caravan that's crossing its nation, headed for the United States. It says here, in posts on Monday, Truth Social, his social network, he promised additional 10% tariffs on goods from China and 25% duties on merchandise from Mexico and Canada. Trump claimed these nations have not taken strong enough action to stop illicit drugs, particularly fentanyl, from entering the U.S. He said as many talks with China about stopping the flow of drugs were to no avail. The talk or the diplomacy hasn't worked. I think it was Kevin O'Leary on CNN saying you ought to slap 400% tariffs on China, destroy their economy. Bring down the CCP. I mean, when have you heard talk like this on any network, let alone CNN? This article says Trump's advisors are likewise pushing for U.S. sanctions on Chinese financial institutions, allegedly linked to fentanyl trade. Trump will be the ultimate decider. He'll have final say in that king-like position. He'll decide. China is the dominant source. Listen to this. America, I mean, we've talked for 8-10 years about America being attacked from within. It's also being attacked from without. As we've opened the doors, I mean, Obama did this. So really, it's an attack from within and without. But you open the doors to the whole world and 100 people from 180-some countries just come pouring into your nation. No nation can survive this. It says here, China is the dominant source of chemical precursors used by Mexican cartels to produce fentanyl. There's the CCP working with the cartels to make sure we have 100,000 deaths per year in the United States. While China money or Chinese money launderers have become key players in the international drug trade, the Biden administration has been negotiating with Beijing for the past year to crack down on both. Diplomacy has yielded promising but modest results so far. This is Reuters. That has frustrated some U.S. security officials and China hawks who say the U.S. must ratchet up the pressure to get Beijing's leadership to act. They're just not acting. They're not helping. They're quite happy to see America kill itself, to see America commit suicide. Listen to the new the new border czar, Tom Homan. This is a collection of comments he's made in recent interviews. Clip 7.
Well, look, me and the Denver mayor, we agree on one thing. He's willing to go to jail. I'm willing to put him in jail. Because there's a statute. It's Title 8 United States Code 1324 III. And what it says is, it's a felony if you knowingly harbor and conceal an illegal alien from immigration authorities. It's also a felony to impede a federal law enforcement officer. So if we don't want to help, that's fine. He can get the way. But we're going to go do the job. President Trump has a mandate for American people. We got to secure this country. We got to save American lives. And I find it shocking that any mayor of a city would say, the President Trump's been clear, we want to concentrate on public safety threats and national security threats. I find it hard to believe that any mayor or governor would say they don't want public safety threats removed from their neighborhood.
Let me be clear. There is going to be a mass deportation because we just finished a mass illegal immigration crisis on the border. Where anybody can look at, 9 out of 10 people claim asylum at the border will end up with an order of removal. So you can't ask for the right to claim asylum, the right to see a judge, the right to due process, and we give you that due process, and at the end of that due process, a federal judge orders you removed. We have to remove them. Because if we don't, shut down immigration court. Those orders don't mean anything anymore. Take you guys off the border because there's no consequences. That is why there needs to be a mass deportation. We got a mass number of people, millions of people, who will get a final order and be ordered removed. If we don't do it, what is the option? Let them stay? Because if you let them stay, you'll never fix the border. You're going to send a message to the rest of the world. Enter the country legally, which is a crime. Ignore a court order. You never have to go home. We're telling the whole world it's okay to enter this country legally. You never got to go home. We're a nation of laws, and we're going to enforce our laws. Sometime. Let me be clear. I've worked for 6 presidents, starting with Ronald Reagan. Every president I worked for took steps to secure the border because they understood you can't have strong national security if you don't have border security. We need to know who's coming in, what's coming in, where it's coming in, why it's coming, all those questions, right? No one did better than President Trump.
Of all the presidents he's worked for, and he's worked for several, none of them have been better than President Trump. And this is what a majority of Americans voted for. They want change. They want security. They want borders. You know, I've made the point where he's, even now, I mean, he's the president-elect. He's not even in office yet. He's just putting together his team, like, with guys like that. And yet he sends out those notes, those messages, a couple days ago saying, I'm going to put a 25% tariff, Canada and Mexico. You better step up to the plate. You better provide some helpful assistance. This is Justin Trudeau commenting on how he was very quick to respond to Trump's statement. And he got on the phone, and it's not a phone supplied by the DOJ or the FBI. Trump's team has decided, you know what, we'll use our own technology this time around because you people are crooks. You spy on us. You cover up crimes. You create crimes when you're coming after me. So Trudeau, he calls Trump the other night, and then here's what he had to say in front of the cameras, clip four.
I had a good call with Donald Trump last night again. We obviously talked about laying out the facts, talking about how the intense and effective connections between our two countries flow back and forth. We talked about some of the challenges that we can work on together. It was a good call. This is something that we can do. Laying out the facts, moving forward in constructive ways. This is a relationship that we know takes a certain amount of working on, and that's what we'll do. I reached out immediately to Doug Ford to agree with him that we would have a first minister's meeting this week to talk about the United States.
First minister's meeting this week to talk about the United States. You see, now, as far as border security goes, we're partners. We want to help Trump. Trump's not even the president. Hey, look at, he's being treated like he's president already. The world knows what's going on. The world knows who's coming in. The world knows that he has the support this time around of a majority of Americans. This is not just a Trump thing. This is an American thing. You better fix this. Or else all of these goods that just come pouring into the United States from Canada, from Mexico. I mean, this could crush their economies. So again, you know, you better be careful when you start triggering trade wars, because nations can band together against the United States. That's what the Mart of Nations prophecy is all about. As I say, we'll have to be covering that in the months ahead, I'm sure. But that said, what a different tone. A completely different tone. Someone that's, and it makes you think, what have Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, the dear leader, what have they done to enhance security, to secure the border? Well, they're the ones behind the free flow of immigrants coming in. This is what they've wanted. They've wanted to crush the middle class. They want wages to go down. They want the cheap labor. They don't mind the criminals, the gang rapes, the murderers. They don't mind any of that. They don't care about Lake and Riley. I mean, that's just, you know, collateral damage. They're the problem, you see. And Trump, as he campaigned, I've got to fix this. I've got to change this. Look at how quickly a president-elect got a favorable response from Canada and from Mexico. I mean, the Canadian side of this is astounding, really. I think there was one leader of a province that said, hey, we're not Mexicans. We're not the Mexican government. Most of your problems coming in from the South. Trump says, no, there's problems on both sides. And so I'm going to deal with both equally. It's pretty amazing. This is regarding his transition team and the agreement. He's been negotiating this with the fake president, I guess, over the last couple weeks. But Sundance says here, the President Trump transition team has signed a memorandum of understanding to start the process of transferring control of the federal government. The landing teams from each of the cabinets will now begin to engage with their exiting counterparts. This is real. I mean, this in itself is an amazing story. Amazing in a, is this really happening in America kind of way? Did this really go on? This is third world banana republic stuff, the details that Sundance covers. It says there were many articles written about the delays in signing the agreements. However, President Trump waited until he has his cabinet fully assembled before signing the first part of the permits and landing teams to engage. The second part, with the government provided offices and technology, is not being accepted. The tradition is that if it's an incoming administration, the government, you know how helpful the government is. They give you all the office space, the technology, the cell phones that you could want. And this time the Trump team says, I don't want any of it. I don't want your devices. I don't want to be in your offices. I don't want to be anywhere near you. We'll talk to some of the agency leaders and talk about transitioning. Okay. But we're going to use our technology this time around, because guess what you did last time with that technology that you so helpfully provided? You spied on us, and then you lied to FISA, and then you triggered all of these investigations to just harass my presidential administration, my term in office. He's ready this time around. Sundance says, President Trump's chief of staff, Susie Wiles, announced the Trump transition team has refused to sign the MOU with the Government Services Administration and will not be using cell phones, computers, offices, any technology provided by the GSA. This is a smart move to avoid the deep state surveillance situation that was faced in the first term. Like I say, you read this and you're just like, wow, this, I mean, it's all there in Lee Smith's book, Disappearing a President. It's all there in our book, you know, America Under Attack. It goes blow by blow through all of the treasonous behavior that went on for years. And like I said yesterday on the show, no wonder they're shaking in fear at the DOJ right now, because they know they've been breaking the law. It says, and this is Sundance, in the first Trump administration, the GSA had wiretaps, office bugs, and gave all the electronic communication information from the Trump transition to the FBI, the intelligence community, and later Robert Mueller. It was a coup. That's what we're seeing. It was a coup from the beginning, an insurrection. An attempt to destroy a duly elected president. And they'd do it again if they could. But they've been defanged this time, to use the term Politico used. They've been defanged. They're not trusted by Trump's team. They're being ignored. They're depressed. It says, in essence, the GSA spied on the Trump team, then gave all the data to the operatives who were in place to target them. The Trump team is not making this mistake again. They've learned a little something from the last go-round. Sundance says the Trump transition team is also not going to use the office space provided by the GSA and will instead have their own offices and security systems in place to coordinate the transition to power. They're just going to use the winter White House instead. That's down at Mar-a-Lago. I saw a story the other day about, I think maybe Jesse covered it, about costs for properties in West Palm Beach. They're just skyrocketing. I mean, the place is just, there's an electricity in the air. This is the real president. This is the real leader. That's going to drill, baby, drill. That's going to seal the border. That's going to send back the illegals. That's going to reduce inflation. That's going to slap tariffs on nations that practice unfair trade imbalances. All of these people, now all of a sudden, they want to get in on the action down around Mar-a-Lago. They want to be part of this movement. They see the polls. They see that he has 60% support during this transition period. They see how depressed the communist regime is. They see how the dear leader has been silenced. These times we're living in, I mean, they really do make your head spin for the prophetic insight that you need amid all of these crazy events that we're witnessing. It's provided right here in this book, America Under Attack. If you don't have a copy, make sure you call our operators today and request your free copy. There's no cost or obligation. That's all we have time for on today's show. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting, even the day before Thanksgiving. That's right. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.